From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Maybe tech devices are not actually conspiring to control our lives, but they clearly are developing capabilities that will more and more shape our experience. Our guest today, who has her finger on the pulse of what's coming, says it won't be long before we'll all have to choose if we're an Apple home, a Google home, or an Amazon home. Amy Webb founded the Future Today Institute, which researches and analyzes emerging technologies. She also talks with us about the impending death of the smartphone and paints a picture of what's next.
We're transitioning, you know, into a post-screen environment where we are talking to machines, we are wearing computable devices, and the environments that we're walking around in are responsive to us in real time.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Many of us find it mind-boggling to keep track of the next time-saving tech gadget, software update, or novel device that comes to market. But our guest today has her finger on the pulse of all that. In fact, her focus is light years ahead of it all. Amy Webb is the founder of the Future Today Institute, which researches and analyzes emerging technologies. She's the author of The Signals Are Talking, Why Today's Fringe is Tomorrow's Mainstream. And she's also professor of strategic foresight at New York University's Stern School of Business. Webb splits her time between New York and Baltimore. We catch up with her from time to time when she's in town to learn what's on her radar. Welcome back to On the Record, Amy.
Thank you.
First, I want to ask you about one of your technology trend predictions. In the latest Future Today Institute Tech Trends Report, which you've published each year since 2007, you write, quote, 2018 marks the beginning of the end of traditional smartphones, close quote. But Apple's latest, the iPhone XS that came with a $1,500 price tag, sold out its pre-stock orders last month within about an hour of becoming available. So unpack your thinking about smartphones.
Right. That seems hard to square, right?
Yeah.
So here's what's happening. If you were to go back to the year 2008, we were carrying around a tremendous amount of equipment with us. I know I myself had a mini disc player. I had a very heavy Toshiba satellite laptop computer that doubled as a self-defense weapon. It was so heavy. I had a digital camera. I was carrying around lots of different devices. And in the year 2018, I have all of that functionality in a single device, my cell phone.
Make my point.
We're in love with our smartphones. So what am I talking about when I say that 2018 is the beginning of the end of smartphones? Well, Apple's most recent phones notwithstanding, if you look at the global market share and the global sales of phones, what we see is market penetration. So the rates have gone down, or they've plateaued, or they've gone down. And if you look at, you know, whether it's Gartner's research or Forrester research, everybody who's looking at aggregate sales, we're already starting to see a slowdown.
But that just means people have them already.
Well, the question is, what does it mean, right? So from my vantage point, with each new phone, there are only mildly incremental benefits, just tiny changes. And for that reason, we don't see the adoption rate changing like we used to. So people aren't, this one particular phone sold out, and Apple had a great day. But overall, we don't see people spending the night at shopping malls to buy the latest iPhone, and we don't see them doing the same thing for the latest Samsung phones. And part of it is that these devices are expensive, and the wireless carriers are incentivized, along with the manufacturers of the phones, to keep us buying at pretty regular intervals. But in reality, there's a lot of other more attractive devices on the market. So that brings me back to the year 2008. So if you were to go back in time and say to yourself, the 2008 version of yourself, one of these days, 10 years from now, you're going to be carrying one tiny computer in your pocket, and that thing's going to have all this functionality and more, you would have said, forget it. So what I would say to you today is, look at all of the other things we're now carrying around. So people have Fitbits and fitness trackers. They are wearing Bluetooth wireless earphones that do more than just play sound. They respond to gesture. They respond to voice. You know, we're buying all kinds of different peripherals. And on top of everything else, just as Apple was releasing that new iPhone, there was a tiny company in Florida called Magic Leap that released its smart glasses headset. So you're not going to find these commercially because they're not intended for everybody to use yet. But this is next generation smart glasses technology. It's not augmented reality. It's not virtual reality. It's something markedly different. And I believe that's where we're headed. And much of the functionality and the, you know, what we do with our mobile devices, we will be doing with a computer that we wear. So we're transitioning, you know, into a sort of post-screen environment where we are talking to machines, we are wearing computable devices, and the environments that we're walking around in are responsive to us in real time.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Amy Webb, founder of the Future Today Institute, which researches and analyzes technology trends. We're talking about the coming of wearable technologies.
So I won't feel the need to do email the way I
well,
do it now on my
right.
smartphone.
So, I mean, we're still going to type. We will still be sending emails and we will still be reading things. So this doesn't mean we're not going to have tablets, right, or computers. What it does mean is that rather than walking around with our heads buried into a single screen that we hold in our hand, we will have many different types of screens that are virtual that we see in front of us. This is not tomorrow and it's not sci-fi. This is all modeled in data that we've got access to. So this is coming using, there's like a rigorous analysis that goes into this. And when I've said this, which is very controversial to people before, I'll get responses like, well, but everybody wears contact lenses. People aren't going to wear glasses. Now, you and I are wearing glasses.
Yes, we are.
So we may be biased, but here's what I'll say. The journal Ophthalmology, which is the scientific journal of the ophthalmic community, right, which are eye doctors, has a recent study out showing that by the year 2050, half of the world's population is going to need to wear glasses. There's several similar studies. Now, why might that be? Because we're all staring into screens all day long, and biologically, we have not evolved as quickly as the technology in our lives. So this is a way of saying we're all going to need glasses pretty soon, right?
They might as well be Magic Leap glasses.
But that's one of the things that will, that's a dependency that will cause the acceleration of wearable computing devices.
I get that in terms of glasses. Are there other wearable devices that you see being bigger than they are now?
I mean, sure. We will likely transition from the smartphone, which is a singular device that does many things. Over the next 10 years, we will transition back into carrying around many different devices.
I hate to hear that.
Well, but they're, you know, think of it this way. It's less clunky, and this is much more about integrating the body with the computer. So wireless earphones. The earphones that I've got right now are pretty slick. They play music. They respond to voice, so I can access using voice commands. But the next generation of these that we're starting to see now, and every major tech company is working on them, include biometric data collection and analysis. So, for example, when you work out, you've got wireless earbuds in. Those earbuds not only play music, they also do things like monitor.
Take your blood pressure.
That's right. That's right. And we're starting to see this, well, because Apple also released a watch. So smartwatches are also quite popular, and Apple's new smartwatch now doubles as a heart monitoring device, which has been FDA approved. So this, you know, the signals are all there. We are definitely headed into a future in which it's not just about using a single computer, like a cell phone, smartphone, to give us information and to allow us to send information in a somewhat sort of linear way. This is much closer to an omnidirectional experience where we are constantly shedding data with our devices, and those devices are collecting, mining, refining, and hopefully giving us some insights with all that data.
And so, as I understand, what you're envisioning is a whole series of changes. It may not be quite fair to ask you for a timeline, but
yeah.
Can you imagine what kind of date you're looking at where I'm going to happily give up my smartphone?
Sure.
Because I don't see it.
Any futurist worth her salt will not give you a date. And there's a mathematical reason for why. There are too many dependencies. So there's a range. You know, I would be comfortable saying that over the next 10 years, given what we know to be true today and the rate of acceleration and adoption and investment in the space, we're going to start seeing some changes. So we will probably see more and more computers that we wear versus computers that we hold. But it is mathematically impossible because I do not have all the variables for me to say that by the year 2031, nobody's going to have a cell phone anymore.
You're going to have to pry it out of my cold, dead hands. Amy Webb is the founder of the Future Today Institute, which researches and provides insight on emerging technologies. She's also a professor of strategic foresight at New York University. Quick break here. When we're back, we'll ask about what it means to live in a smart home. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today with Amy Webb. She founded the Future Today Institute, which researches and analyzes emerging technologies. We spoke earlier about the impending death of the traditional smartphone. Now we're going to discuss living in a smart home. Last month, Amazon opened its newest and most technologically advanced fulfillment center in Sparrows Point, southeast of Baltimore. Amazon also unveiled several new devices that use its voice-activated technology. You said this about the new products when you were speaking on the podcast This Week in Technology, quote, "It is crystal clear that we are quickly moving into a near future scenario where we're living in an Amazon home, a Google home, or an Apple home. From my vantage point, the Amazon home is likely to be most closely connected with government services," close quote. So that last sentence really caught our attention
yeah.
here. Government services?
Right. So I think we need to unpack this a little bit and explain what's going on. So Amazon released several new products. And I think the most controversial of those products was a microwave. Did you hear about this microwave that they are?
Just that they did it. I don't know much about
it. Right. So that's a lot of people were like, why is Amazon? What's the big deal? Why do I need a voice activated microwave? Right.
Yeah.
All right. So the microwave does more than just respond to your voice. It tracks what you're cooking. So for example, if you pop popcorn in your, I won't say her name because I don't want to set anybody's home devices off, but the A word, if you ask the A word to pop popcorn, Amazon is tracking what it is that you're making in that microwave. And if you have a subscription to popcorn, The idea here is that you never run out again because Amazon knows that you've popped 5 out of the 6 bags that came in the box and it's time to send you a new one. That sets the stage for, I think, a future in which commerce, our devices, and our voices are intertwined. And there's a more deeply sort of technical explanation as to exactly what's going on, but let's just say that, you know, we are currently creating vast troves of data just by virtue of being alive. And the more that we subscribe to and use these various services offered by Amazon, Apple, and Google, the more likely it is that the majority of those interactions will be with one of those companies. And I believe those companies are endeavoring to create a sort of singular record, like a personal data record that records all my stuff, right? And how and all of that data. You know, a lot of what happens at those three companies is not interoperable. So if we sort of take this, you know, if we model this out and we include lots of other factors, what's on the horizon? Well, what's on the horizon is we may wind up living in homes where the majority of the devices in those homes operates on one of three platforms: Google Smart Home platform, Apple, or Amazon, which, you know, means that you're living in a Google house, an Amazon house, or an Apple house, which therefore means that you are probably a Google family, an Apple family, or an Amazon family. So if we set all of that aside for a moment and look at some of the other activities of these companies, Google, Amazon, and Apple all have various contracts with third parties, including the government. But Amazon has been pretty forward in its thinking on government contracts. And it's also started to think about things like education. And so, you know, given its previous work in the space, in the government contract space, and given how forward thinking I think Jeff Bezos is, and the head of Amazon, and how, you know, he is operating at a different level than everybody else, I could absolutely see a scenario in which Amazon and the government have figured out that, you know, maybe subsidized housing in the future is Amazon housing. And
but if I'm worried about my privacy, if I'm worried about any of these three collecting so much data on me, first of all, am I willing to put up with a little bit of inefficiency to diversify my use so that even though it would be easier to get everything from Amazon, I'm going to go out of my way to do some business with Google and some with Apple just so that no single company has the whole profile on
me. Except that that's literally never happened. Like, I mean, if you stop and sort of see where we are today, Gmail is the predominant email provider. Like, we have a limited number of enormous tech companies providing the majority of services.
Right, but people can say, okay, I'll go to Google for my email, but I'll go to Apple for my voice communication, and I'll go to
that's kind of a pain. And most people, you know, if you look at innovation, the things that stick are those that are the most seamless. We want to use the least amount of energy as we can to get things done. I mean, we are biologically wired in that way. So while I applaud your thinking, I really do, you're probably somebody who changes all of her passwords all the time too, which is great. But most people don't do that. You should not admit on the air that you're not changing your passwords.
I'm editing that comment right before it leaves my lips. Okay, but even if I'm going to be relatively lazy about giving all my business to one of these big three companies, do I really want to do it with the one who you say has more government contracts and is thinking of working with the government? You know, Isn't that the one I want to avoid?
This is the thing that I always find interesting. So people freak out when they find out that one of their beloved companies is working with the government. I don't know when working with the government became this black flag. You know, not too long ago, Google was under fire for working on some defense-related contracts. Amazon has recently come under fire for the same thing. There's always been a back and forth between our largest technology companies and our government and military. I feel like now, these days, our personal privacy is a part of that ecosystem, and that should give everybody some pause, right? That being said, Facebook just had one of the largest breaches of data in the history of
data, right? Breaches.
That's correct. And guess what? I don't see their usage dropping off, right? So, and that's why it's good to have these conversations now, because if privacy really is something that you are concerned about in the realm of smart devices, smart homes, and just a few companies collecting and using your data, then you need to change your behavior. I think the challenge is we don't see a lot of behavioral shifts happening in response to catastrophic data breaches already.
That's Amy Webb, founder of the Future Today Institute, here on The Record on WYPR. The Future Today Institute researches and analyzes technology trends. So you're talking about a world in which we're all of our homes are connected with one of these big three. What is it like to live in a house that is so connected like that?
Sure. So I think that depending on your vantage point and how comfortable you are with technology, this is either going to sound dystopian or like a world in which you can't wait to live. So, picture a kitchen that has all of the usual appliances and devices that we already use. So refrigerators, microwaves, you know, coffee machines. The key difference between the year 2018 and let's say the year 2030, is that those devices are connected to the internet, and they are both connecting, they are collecting and receiving data with a third party. So for example, you know, I mentioned the smart microwave earlier. And that Amazon is tracking what you're cooking in that microwave and incentivizing you to subscribe to the products that you use regularly and maybe giving you a small discount if you sign up for a subscription. That implies that you never have to order, let's say, popcorn ever again because it just shows up. Well, what if there's also an Amazon refrigerator, you know, and an Amazon oven that is similarly able to track the different foods that you eat? So that's kind of an interesting concept, right? And that also then spills over into places like our bathrooms. So Kohler has a brand new toilet that I think is going on sale later in the year or next year, but it is voice activated. So this is a toilet that you can talk to. So you go into your bathroom and it is powered by Amazon's voice assistant, who, again, I'm not going to say her name because I don't want to set off everybody's devices. But you go into your bathroom, you say hello to your toilet, and
no, really?
And, you play music, you get, I guess, the sports scores, whatever it is that you want to do. And then if you are, you know, certain people, I guess you conveniently forget to ask the system to put the toilet seat back down or whatever. So that may seem frivolous and silly. What's the point of this? Well, I think it portends, again, like if we start mapping some of this out, you know, we have image and object recognition. We have voice recognition. We have authentication using our biomatter. Isn't it plausible that a lot of the diagnostics that we currently have to go to a physical clinic for could therefore be done right inside of our bathrooms? So we don't have to make a run to GBMC or to Mercy or, you know, to LabCorp or Quest or whatever, you know, to get basic diagnostics done. That would be done right in our own homes. So I think when people think about the future and living in connected homes, we tend to think of the Jetsons where, you know, we have robots living among us and food looks really different. And, you know, I think what we're talking about is much more subtle.
Well, maybe subtle, but two things occur to me. One is it sounds to me like we're talking about middle class or upper class homes. It sounds to me like we're talking about fairly well appointed homes, not necessarily beautiful decor, but a certain amount of money that can be invested.
But here's the thing. So the Amazon microwave is like $50. It is comparable to a microwave that you know, not a high-end microwave. That's the difference. We're in a situation now where, you know, we have more powerful computers that are cheaper. We have smart Bluetooth speakers and not just those speakers, but like other embeddable devices that are like $20. This is not all enormously expensive equipment. And in fact, you could argue that a lot of what I'm talking about is far cheaper than the latest iPhone, right? I mean, if you stop and think about it that way, you know, you could pretty much outfit an entire kitchen at this moment with smart devices for less money than you would need to purchase the new iPhone. So, you know, what we're talking about here, the smart home technology, sure, there's super high-end versions of things, but I think that this is the key differentiator. We are talking about technology that's intended for everybody, partially because the more scale there is, the more data there is, and the more data there is, the more money there is to be made.
I have a feeling I'm going to need to talk to you about this more. I appreciate your talking about it today. Thank
sure.
you. Amy Webb is the founder of the Future Today Institute, which provides insights on emerging technologies for businesses around the world. She's also professor of strategic foresight at New York University's Stern School of Business. We have a link to where you can subscribe to the FTI newsletter at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.